Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer.
And I'm Zach Bernard. We'll begin our March news roundup with a look back at the life and legacy of former U.S. Senator Birch Bayh. He passed away in March at the age of 91. His work while a senator made a lasting impact on national politics, including some hefty work on the U.S. Constitution itself. While politics may feel like it has changed a lot since Bayh lost his Senate seat in 1981, political scientist Andy Downs says his legacy leaves lessons for today's political climate. He spoke with WBOI News Director Rebecca Green.
Andy, thanks for coming by WBOI Presents to talk to us a little bit about the late Birch Bayh. What's important for Indiana residents to know about his importance first to the state and then to the national political discourse and to Democrats in general?
I think there are several ways to look at Birch Bayh's lifetime. You know, for a lot of people, they actually kind of forget that he was not only a member of the General Assembly, but actually the Speaker of the House. So, you know, that's a fairly significant role right there. What people are most familiar with, of course, is his time in the Senate, and that's with good reason. He actually authored 4 amendments to the Constitution, 2 of which actually made it through. A third almost made it through and had significant result for the rest of the population. The 4th one is one that we still talk about today. And to remind people, that would be the amendment regarding succession of the president, so the 25th Amendment. 26th Amendment, and I'm always quick to remind students that the reason they get to vote at 18 is because of an Indiana senator named Birch Bayh. That's when they lowered the voting age from 21 to 18. So those are the 2 that passed. The one that almost passed, of course, was the Equal Rights Amendment, and I think that that's significant in and of itself given how close that it came. But for those who are looking for more concrete examples, I would simply point to Title IX, which has created a level of equity in academics and elsewhere that didn't exist beforehand. And then the 4th one, the one that we're still talking about today, is actually the elimination of the Electoral College. That was something that he continued to work on after he left office. Obviously was not successful in doing that, but if people are listening today, and even if they're not listening today, they've heard criticism of the Electoral College. Those are examples right there. Beyond that, he actually was known as somebody who was quite good at his constituent service work. So if you had a problem with the government, he was going to help you out, and it did not matter who you were. You could have been somebody who gave a boatload of money to his opponent, and he and his staff were going to try and help you out. So good constituent service. And then finally, the way that people might want to remember him is that he never ran away from the fact that he was a liberal. And there are conservatives who voted for him in spite of that. They believed he was somebody who was trying to do what was right for the state and for the country, and they trusted him and his goodwill. They may have disagreed with him on issues, but they understood that having a person they could trust, a person they believed was trying to do what was best and right, was more important than finding somebody who was necessarily an ideologue who was more aligned with them politically. Now, obviously, that came to an end in 1980. When Dan Quayle managed to win that seat. But we should also remember that was an unbelievably good year for Republicans in general. They won something like 12 additional seats in the Senate that year. And keep in mind, we're talking about a third of those seats being up in any election. So that was a really, really good year for Republicans. And that definitely was a wave across the entire country, not necessarily an indictment of Birch Bayh as an individual, but a recognition that something special happened that year.
Senator Bayh kind of harkens back to a different time, and you just kind of mentioned it, where Indiana had elected Democrats at the state and national level outside of Indianapolis. Did his defeat in 1980 and kind of the resurgence of the Republican Party in the state, or the rise of Reagan Republicanism, kind of end that, though his son served in both his old seat and as governor? It seems like a different time, almost even quaint, where, oh my goodness, we elected Democrats in a very red state.
It certainly was a different time, and I think we have to remember that. Things go in cycles, or they go in eras, so to speak. He was in office at a time when Democrats were elected, but at the same time, if you went down to the southern part of the state, a Democrat down south was actually a pretty conservative individual versus a Democrat from, say, Bloomington or Lake County.
Like Adams County Democrats.
Yeah, so maybe a little further south than that, mm-hmm. even. But a good example, I mean, where you see that in general, Democrats throughout the state were more conservative than you might expect to find, yet you still had individuals like a Birch Bayh who was liberal, who could run as a liberal and managed to find electoral success. 1980 certainly is an important moment because we saw a lot of individuals defeated and what we sort of think of as the Reagan era begin, and rightly so. From there, though, what you saw is an evolution in what it meant to be a successful Democratic candidate, statewide candidate. When Birchbaugh's son, Evan Bayh, ran for Secretary of State, the joke at the time was there were a lot of voters who thought they were voting for Birchbaugh. Now, of course, we don't know if anybody actually thought that, but that was the joke at the time. But by the time Evan Bayh was running for governor and running for senator, he had basically established what the new prototype was for a successful Democratic candidate, a much more moderate individual who was very conscious of more modern campaigning techniques, able to raise a boatload of money and do the things that we now sort of think of as standard for campaigns. That model may have run its course now, because we saw Evan Bayh defeated in a Senate race. We saw Joe Donnelly, who was very much in that same sort of mold, defeated in a Senate race. And maybe we're about to find a new model. And maybe that new model is somebody who embraces their liberal stance on issues, but at the same time is able to point to pragmatic things they have done or ways in which they might be categorized as more conservative on some issues. Maybe that's the new successful model, because a moderate Democrat running against a conservative Republican doesn't seem to work right now.
You almost seem like you might have somebody on your mind when you say that.
When the 2018 election was over, I said that with no one in my mind, but I was suggesting that there's the need for, at least on the Democratic side, experimentation with new models. And clearly now some people would say, oh, he's talking about Mayor Pete. And that's not necessarily who I'm talking about, although he certainly has some of those characteristics. He is more liberal on a number of issues than a lot of people would expect to see in a successful mayor in northeastern or central Indiana. But I like to say that his, what some people would consider to be liberal positions, are actually tempered by a pragmatism that's necessary as a mayor. Mayors have to get things done. Members of the General Assembly, no disrespect intended, do not, because there are a whole lot of other legislators who can make sure things are getting done. Members of Congress do not have to get things done, although a lot of people would like to see them get more things done. People who are in executive positions, especially at the local level, don't have options. Streets have to get plowed. Fire trucks have to get where they're going. Zoning has to happen. Mayors are much more pragmatic. And that actually sometimes is a curse for them, because what people see is somebody who is not conservative enough or not liberal enough, because in accomplishing things, they've had to be much more pragmatic. And therefore, the people out at the extremes would say have sort of gone away from the true ideology. They're not passing the purity test.
What are some lessons that we can take from the late Senator Birchbaugh and how he politicked versus how we talk about politics today?
There's an interesting possibility of a convergence here almost. Birchbaugh loved talking with people. The joke was, if you were driving in some place and the car stopped and there was somebody on the corner, he would have no problems rolling down the window and talking to that person, even jumping out of the car and talking to that person. He wanted to engage with people. He wanted to know what they thought. He wanted to try and sell his ideas. We then moved into an era of high, at the time, technology, lots of television commercials, lots of radio spots, very much controlling the message. And that, in some respects, is great because you're controlling the message. It's exactly what you want to have delivered, but it lacks the engagement that people are looking for in elected officials. With the advent of social media, or more accurately, the improved usage of social media, we may be coming to a point where that desire to engage with people that you saw in the Birchbaughs of days gone by is coming back again, and there's a high-tech version of that. So, you know, you tweet things. You think of Representative Ober from this area, who's no longer representative. He was known for his Twitter account, and people followed it because it was a way to stay engaged with him. That's something that we're seeing more and more, a way for elected officials, for candidates to engage with voters, still in a somewhat controlled fashion, because you're controlling what's happening on your Twitter feed and other social media, but it's allowing for engagement in a way that a lot of people consider to be meaningful. The same way someone walking up on your porch, knocking on your door and saying, hi, my name is, I'm running for, would have been, you know, 30 years ago.
It seems too, as we look kind of at his impact, two constitutional amendments, that is not a small thing.
No, it's actually, as people have pointed out, he wrote more of our Constitution as it exists today than anyone other than the Founding Fathers.
And, you know, Title IX, as a woman in my mid-40s, I got to play a lot of sports growing up because of Title IX. And it was referenced, Title IX.
Oh, yeah.
So it's fair to say all of us owe Senator Bayh a debt of gratitude at some level.
I think it is. There's no doubt about it. I would take it a step further. You got to vote at 18 because of Senator
Bayh.
That's
true, too. Yeah. Anything else you want to add? Anything more people should know about Senator Bayh?
He never stopped working on public policy issues. I mean, he went into the lobbying world, and some people think, oh, that's a terrible thing. But we should always remember, we hate the lobbyists who are pushing issues we don't care for. We love the ones who are pushing the issues we care for. So I'm sure there's reason to like and hate what he did as a lobbyist. But in spite of that, he continued to work on popular vote being the way we decide the presidency. He continued to work on women's issues. He continued to work on ways for businesses that received federal dollars being able to discover something new and capitalize on that from an economics or a business standpoint. Those are things that are certainly worth knowing. And then the last thing, and I stress this all the time, his desire to engage with people. We find people, unfortunately, far too polarized today, and in many respects, unwilling to talk with people from the other side because they're, quote, wrong. What we find in the Department of Political Science at Purdue University Fort Wayne is that when we talk with students, we actually try to help them see things from multiple perspectives. And if you ask them afterwards, what is the party affiliation of your professor? Quite often, they will say, oh, so-and-so is, and it's the same party affiliation they have. Here's why we think that happens. They see us as being reasonable, as simply talking through issues and thinking about them and weighing pros and cons. They see that as reasonable, and they believe they are reasonable. So we think there's actually a great deal of opportunity for discussion when you are open to understanding something else. And Birch Bayh, I think, fell into that category, and it's something that we should all be trying to do.
Some old-fashioned lessons for a very modern time.
There you go.
Thank you so much for coming by WBOI Presents.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.